Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a special episode of Rock That Relationship. Tracy and I are here today on February 10th, 2026, the very birthday of my new memoir, The Soulmate Strategy, my imperfect plan to conquer heartbreak and find true love. It's a birthday. I'm having birthday parties. I've had people send me messages today, like happy birthday to my book. So anyways, we're doing a special episode today. I wanted Tracy to be the first person that I talked to since I've been on a bunch of podcasts and other things, but I wanted, you know, up to now, today is the birthday. So my very first birthday conversation is with my
I'm going to take credit for it too, because I'm the one who said you should be writing this all down.
I know. And I did. I wrote it all down. Remember what I did with it when I first wrote this stuff down? I sent it into a magazine. I had like an article or like an essay, and I got a big fat rejection. And then that's when I thought the universe was like, I was like, there's something bigger for me here.
Interesting. See, a lot of people would take that rejection and take it as rejection and say, oh, this is dumb. But no, you say, oh, there's something bigger here for me. Yeah, Isn't that interesting?
I said, they're dumb. It. They don't want to read this, but guess what? I'm going to keep writing this book. Yeah.
Good. Well, good job. Here it is. It's done now.
I know. 4.5 years later.
Wow. That's crazy. 4.5 years.
I know.
I don't think I've stuck with anything for
I was just going to say that. I know.
Wow.
And relentlessly stuck with this. It wasn't like I put it on a shelf for 2 years and like dusted it off. It was like, I've been actively doing something with this for 4.5 years.
Yeah. Like actively, like working on it, editing it, promoting it, getting it published. I mean, that's a crazy amount of work.
I know. And every year I drag you to the book festival. I'm like, all right, let's find any more resources for my book. And now here we are.
Well, but it's worked, right?
It has. It has.
I mean, here it is.
Do you remember my book manifest I wrote?
Yes. You said it's going to be a New York Times bestseller and it's going to help a lot of people.
Well, actually, right? I said it was going to win a Lambda Literary Award.
Okay.
And it was going to be, the process was going to be fun and easy. Not easy, like the work isn't easy, but like the flow would be easy, and that I would meet all the right people to work with. And I have been reflecting on that. Like I have met all the right people to work with, and that manifest is just unfolding. I mean, I hope to win a Lambda Literary Award too. That's in September. But right now I'm like, wow, I have met the best editors, the best publisher, the best coaches, the best publicists. I mean, the people I continue to meet along the way that have paved the path before me is, I'm just so grateful. And that's my manifest.
It's so interesting because you always, like you would ask me, what do you think? You would say, do you like this one or that one? This one or that one? Like when you go to the eye doctor and they're constantly switching this one or that one, this one or that one. And like, sometimes I would have a real reaction, you know, like for the publisher, I told you that one, just go with that one. Yep. Like, it was very clear, like, and I didn't have any extra information. It was just the gut feeling, you know?
Right. And I had that gut feeling too. And that was the best decision I made.
Yeah.
Crazy. For people out there who are listening, I went with She Writes Press. And I was so, so happy. I'm so happy with that decision.
Yeah. And for me, it was just the publisher, the woman's name. Like it was just, it spoke to me, right? I didn't have any other information, but there's just something about it. And I think like, that's the thing is going with your gut. I think, is that like a theme of this book? Do you feel like?
Well, yeah. You know, what's so cool about it is this whole book was the most intuitive thing I think I've ever done, like for this long of a period of time, like the call to write about it. I mean, you had encouraged me to write it down, but I was already collecting these stories in my head. And then the kind of the call to say, hey, listen, like that magazine, who cares about the magazine? I'm going to make this into a book. And I mean, the irony is for our listeners out there to understand how I wrote this book is I started writing it in November, and it was a memoir that started, the story started in July, the previous July. So I was writing kind of in the past about the first 5 months of this book. But then by the time it caught up with me around December, I had written most of that information down. So December, I'm like, what do I do now? I haven't lived the rest of the story. So I just would write whatever was happening. And so it was like my life was unfolding and I'm writing. And I wasn't trying to contrive my life so that I could write a cool book. It was just, I kept writing it down. So the last 7 months of this year-long journey was happening as it was happening. And so it was like super intuitive. Everything about it was intuitive. Like I felt like this was a story that should be included and this one isn't. And this is a person that I should.
But I also feel like you would say things like you'd ask, you'd literally verbalize out loud, like, well, I don't know how I'm going to get this to tie up or how's this loose end going to fit in or how's this going to happen? And then it would happen. Yep. You didn't contrive it. It would happen. You would say it and it would happen.
That it is true, because there was a point in time when I would just say things out loud and then all of a sudden my life would just unfold. And there were things that I couldn't, in some ways, the whole book is about me taking control of things, but there were so many things that I had no control over, but I would just say them out in the world and they would just happen. And I remember I sent my first edition of this to my developmental editor, a big shout out to Sarah Chauncey out there, who really helped me. But I sent an iteration of this to her in March of my year-long journey. So I was about 9 months in and I ended it there. And she said, Corey, this isn't the end of your story. And I said, well, I don't even know how my story is going to end. I don't know what happens next. She goes, well, that's how you've been writing this for most of it anyways. And she said, keep writing. And I just had this kind of gut instinct. And I said, when will the story end? Like I could just keep writing about my life for the next 10 years.
Right.
And she said, you will know when it ends. And it did. Like there was one day, just something happened. I was like, that's the end of this story. It's not the end of my life, but it was the end of the story. And intuitively, I just knew that.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that happened, you know, a lot of that happened with you and this book.
Right. And meeting all the right people. I mean, I have just stumbled upon the coolest people in the process who have helped me.
Have you stumbled upon them or were they put there for you?
The universe put them there in my path to meet. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's take our listeners back to the beginning because, you know, this book, here we are 4.5 years later. I mean, we've been friends for almost 5 years and the start of this book is the introductory chapter, you know?
We met in July. No, do you mean July of 2021?
2021. Yep.
And now it's February of 2025.
2026.
What? Oh my God.
I know you're missing a year. I know. Almost 5 years.
Wow.
I mean, it's a long time, but we met on July 4th and literally the very first chapter of this book is July 4th, 2021.
Wow.
And the day I met you and the day that I realized that I was probably going to die alone. They're mutually exclusive, though. I didn't think me.
Yeah,
and you
excuse me. Hello, yeah. I don't think because you met me, you're like, oh, this is it. Fuck. This is all that's out there in the world. Ugh.
Right, right.
Well, I believe that was your first text about me.
That was my first text
to a friend.
Me. Yeah,
yeah.
I did say
friendship. What friendship potential?
Yeah, and hiking. She likes to hike, but not for dating. And guess
what? Well, I want everyone to be clear that I was never interested in dating. So it's not like I was like, oh, that's so sad. But it is hilarious that you have a text that literally says, ugh.
I know.
But it wasn't my fault you're going to die alone. I didn't even know you.
I know. And I'm not going to die alone. And
nobody. Know. Well, some people do die alone. So I'm watching a movie about that. But that is so dramatic, right? In your mind that you're like, you've had a good group of friends and you've always had a network of people, you know?
Right.
It's very interesting to me because what did you even mean by like, you're going to die alone? You mean not partnered? Because you had friends, you had family, it's not like you were some kind of weird loner.
No.
And not that loners are weird. I take that back.
No, but I mean,
you weren't like a loner.
It wasn't so much like I'm going to like physically be like we all die. A lot of us die alone. It's a solitary process, but it was not like literal. It was more like, oh, my gosh, I'm about to be done with a relationship. It was the relationship was crumbling so far underneath my feet. And I realized, wow, I had just spent a lot of time investing into someone that I might have had a long-term future with. And now here I am kind of in my late 40s, starting all over again. And what if I don't find anybody? What if I, what if I am unpartnered? And you know me, I love to be partnered. I love it. I don't love it so much that I like go cross over and, you know, that kind of thing. I do wait in between, but I'm not one of those people that's like, I love my single time for 10 years. I've never been single for an extended period of time.
But
I was afraid that maybe I would be, and that was scary to me. And since then I've realized that that's not really that scary, to be honest. It's to be single is actually really empowering. But at the time I was terrified.
Yeah, you were. And that led you to that party, right?
Oh, I went to that meetup lesbian pool party. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I was looking for friends. I had plenty of friends. I don't know if I was looking to date somebody because I wasn't full. I mean, I was in the process of breaking up. We officially broke up the very next day. I wasn't going to like.
Well, why were you going? Why was it that you didn't have other plans?
Well, because the
you were embroiled and you were waiting for the person you were with.
The person I was with, we had plans. She didn't show up.
All right. And I went because I was getting divorced and my best friend said, just go. You might meet people just to hang out. And then it was gross and it was, ugh. And then, it wasn't fun. No. It was not my kind of thing.
It was not my kind of thing either. But we ended up talking for a long time. I mean, we talked about all sorts of reality shows. And the funny thing was, is I remember we didn't exchange any contact information.
I know.
And then, I saw you a couple months later. It wasn't until like September that I saw you. You came to my meetup walk and then I reconnected with you. And then after that, we stayed in contact.
You must have told me about that meetup.
I did.
Well, because otherwise, how would I have known? And why didn't we just exchange numbers? That's weird. You were not in a good place because when I left, I called my friend and said, ugh, that was gross. And the only person I met was an uptight East Coast professor trying
I was hurting and suffering inside.
You didn't say that.
Well, I wasn't
going to say like, oh, here I am in this horrible situation.
I'm at this,
and so I thought I'd come to this pool party.
Oh, it was
rant. Ugh,
not good. But guess what? It makes for a really funny.
Everyone
chapter.
Else was having fun.
I mean,
apparently,
yeah,
Everybody else loved it.
They
we
all
were
have
like
fun.
The two curmudgeons.
I know.
I was like, what am I doing here? And I was like across town and there weren't like a lot of trees and I don't, you know, I'm not a big drinker. And so it was like, ick. It was a lot of drinking and eating of foods I would never eat. And so to me, it was just gross and I just didn't get out of there. So we did have a great conversation though.
We did. And we found that we have a lot in common. It's just that I was in a really, really bad place and you were not wanting to be there. Neither of us wanted to be there.
And no, was I in a bad mood? I wasn't in a
bad
mood.
No, you were in a bad mood.
Like, no.
But you just didn't want to be there either. Neither of us had.
I was wearing a long sleeve plaid shirt and jean shorts at a pool party. And I was like.
You were wearing jean shorts?
Yeah. It was my lucky jeans that I cut up. And I had the long sleeve plaid shirt on. And I'm like, I'm not showing 1 inch of skin. I'm getting the hell out of here.
Oh, my God.
And then that's where I ran into you. I was on my way out and. You know, I don't eat food that is at potlucks. I don't touch food that's not, that's either been opened or possibly been opened in someone else's house. And so I don't know why I even stopped. Probably just, I know why. Cause I'd seen your shirt. Cause I was sitting there across the pool and I saw your shirt that I like hiking. And so remember I said like,
Do you like hiking?
And you got like offended. I'm like, it's on your shirt for Christ's sake.
I didn't get
sake.
Offended. I just was like, wow, that's just a very obscure question. And then I realized I was advertising it all over my body.
Yeah,
and then I had a hat
shirt.
On with like a little hiker on it too. I was like, okay. Well, okay. So
that's how people meet other people. They say things.
I know, I had forgotten I was wearing that. I was in such a dark place that day. I was like, it took everything I had to like get myself to go to that.
I know, me too. I was in like such, I literally called my friend afterwards and I'm like, and you love Tucson. I don't. So I was just like so depressed. There's parts of Tucson that are devoid of trees and it's very hot. It was summertime. So it was super hot. I just, people bobbing around topless. Okay. Anyway, other people had fun.
It was not my scene at all, but It was.
See, look at that. I just watched a whole show that was about, or no, I listened to a podcast, or it's like a story, like the moth of a woman's story of a terrible thing happening. And 15 years later, she met the detective that helped her and they got married. They were both divorced. And, you know, he hadn't been creepy when he'd met her the first time. And then she said something great can come out of something ugly. Right. And so that was the genesis of this story, was your sadness and this icky party. And then it turns, you know, I mean, we've been friends now for 5 years and gone through so many things, right?
We have. We've gone through all sorts of heartbreak and heartache, deaths and ends of relationships, jobs, friendship turnover. I mean, we've gone through a lot of stuff.
And here we are.
And here
You're
we
with
are.
The birth of your book, Me Unemployed Again. And we're discussing it. But me happily married, and like, that's the thing. It's like, you don't know, right? Like, you have no idea. We had no idea 5 years ago how any of this would turn out. You didn't know if this would become a book. You didn't know anything.
Right, exactly. Well, and the thing too was, I didn't know how my life would turn out, but the whole point of the book was I was sure trying to control it, right? I didn't want to be alone and I didn't want to hurt anymore. So my whole goal with my journey, that 1 year journey, was do everything I can to not feel like crap. And I tried everything I could. Every time you would send me a suggestion, I'm like, okay, I'll try that. And then I would look things up online and I would hear other people recommend things. And I just started trying things. Some things helped. I mean, they really did. I mean, there were certain things that helped me get through kind of the healing process, probably a little faster, like making friends, getting outside, you know, those things. But there were some things that weren't productive whatsoever, like lurking in the bookstore. I lurked at Bookman.
See, like that, exactly. That isn't, if I were to suggest that to you now, like, it wouldn't be a good thing, right? So it's like taken in context, like some of those things aren't good no matter what state you're in. And it's like, you have to find the things. I mean, I was depressed, like, I don't know, a month ago, having nothing to do with my personal life, just the world. And like, I really just talked about it with my wife and I'm like, I just need to tell you, this is how I'm feeling. It has nothing to do with us. It's like, I can't get out of it. I'm in a funk. And then I was thinking last night, like, oh, that just went away. Even though nothing has changed. I mean, there's been a little positive developments in the world, but like, I then, okay, I'm going to take in this news. I'm going to hear these bad things, but I'm also at the same time seeing the good ones. Like, I was in a space where I couldn't see the good things, right? It was so dark to me and depressing.
It was,
you know,
to be honest, I mean, I know that.
I wasn't talking to anybody or doing anything.
You were barely
outside
talking
of my home.
To me. You fell off into this black hole for like a month or two. And then now I'm like, oh, I think she's back. We're going hiking on Saturday and we're, you know,
I know,
Sunday.
But
I
that's
mean, and
so,
but
Friday
but
and Sunday,
but
because I couldn't see anything but that.
Yeah. Well, and that's
in the
how,
world.
And that's what I didn't want to have happen when I was going through this heartbreak, was like, I didn't want to be balled up on the floor and eating ice cream and crying forever. I didn't want to be in that dark place. So I was like, I'm going to do everything I can to climb out of it. And some of it was kind of, you know, manufactured, right? Like try to fake it or try to move forward. And like I said, some of it worked, but then some of it was just time. Some of it was external things. Some of it was just my attitude and my mindset, and things just started to get lighter and easier. And, you know, and then I plunged into the dating scene, which, you know, was felt hopeless there for a while. And then it felt confusing for a while. But the whole idea is, and you know, as well as I do, that only so much of life can be controlled, right? There's some things we can control, like our physical reactions sometimes to things, not always, but like we can control some of that stuff. We can control our actions, meaning like if I want to, you know, go to play basketball, I can get my basketball and go play. But for the most part, a lot of life can't be controlled. We just have to learn how to interpret it, bring it in, make meaning of it, and then show up in a way that feels good, or else we're going to be stuck in that funk you're talking about. And I did not want this for this horrible breakup to be stuck in that for, it could have been years. I went to that healing circle, right? And there were women there that were like
8 years.
8 years. There was a woman who we were sitting there, and she comes every week to the healing circle. She's been divorced for 8 years. And I believe that her husband was remarried and had children with his new partner. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't, you know, and I don't want to diss anybody's like healing process, because it's, you know, there's no time limit. But at the same time, I didn't want to spend 8 years sobbing and being sad and being in that hole like you're talking about. And So we do.
Is that the point of your book? Is that that's a choice? Did that woman, maybe that woman wanted to be in that place because the husband didn't. And who knows? I mean, I don't know. It is weird, but I do think if you've experienced ups and downs in life, then you realize like your feelings about things do change. I mean, the stuff that, you know, I'm obviously in the book, right? And the stuff that I experienced, I have no feeling about whatsoever. It's like it didn't even happen to me because it's not relevant to my life whatsoever now.
Right.
You know?
It's
and
just
so
a memory. Yeah.
I don't even have the memory. I don't even care. Like there's nothing about me that cares. And so like I've looked back on my life, like the things that were so hard in the '90s and all that, like it means nothing to me now. It's like I save in my life. Mm-hmm. And so is that a strategy? Is that, you know, my Buddhist belief about non-attachment and like moving on and that all of things change? But, you know, it's hard to say that to people when they're in the middle of a crisis, right? But I do think that's part of the point of your book is that it's not about, I mean, you have to make a choice. We just live here. Like we're here for a limited amount of time. Mm-hmm. And I do believe it is a legitimate choice to leave this earth if like things are so bad, right? But a lot of these things that we perceive as bad with time and effort, it's like it didn't even happen to you. It's just like, so like for me to see your book and know that there's things about me in there, it's like not even me anymore. It's not me. That is not me. So if someone were to read that today and think, oh, that she's like this, or this is her experience. It's not. That's like another version of me. And I told you about that movie we watched, or TV shows, episodes, Life After Life. Did you watch that?
I did not.
Basically, the girl keeps coming back, right? So, and in each lifetime, she learns something. So she keeps coming back to the same family as the same baby. But each time, her next life that she lives, she has learned from that previous one not to do this or that. And it changes the outcome of her life. And I feel like I'm doing that. I feel like I'm doing that in real time. And I do feel like that's a message of the book is that, and I preach this to people that I do, you know, like work with for their divorce and all that. And this is not defining, like you define it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know it's so hard, but you know, watching Come See Me in the Good Light about Andrea Gibson and then reading, you know, Elizabeth Gilbert's book, All the Way to the River or something like that. The same themes are in there, that this life is difficult, right? It is hard, but there's more to it than we see. And that ties in your book, I think also about like the psychic things and the like, or what do you want to call them? Supernatural or... Like, I don't even know what the term is anymore. Like, it's not just what we're seeing. There's so much more to this existence than who we are at this time. And that lady who couldn't let go for 8 years, maybe that's what her soul had to go through. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe she got something out of it. Maybe she enjoyed that.
I mean, I think she probably liked the community of it. And I mean, but... You know, like what you're talking about, I look back at this person and I think if that Corey today, if I were to go through this experience 5 years ago, I would do it really, really differently. Not because I can look back and judge that what I did was wrong, but I can look back and say, I'm just a different person now. And I've learned so much. But the irony is that what I've learned to be able to handle that situation better, I learned by going through that very situation. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's where you're talking about your life experiences. So you're not who you were in the 90s, but you are who you are because of the 90s. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the important thing is that our life is just a cumulative effect of all of our learning lessons. And, you know, I think about this book was, you know, it was chaotic and it was messy and I was right smack in the middle of it. And there are some things I likely wouldn't do again because I've been in situations similar to those since. And I haven't done the chaotic, messy thing. But I needed to go through it to understand that, like, okay, that's one path. And I learned a ton about myself. I learned so much more about myself in that 1 year of life than I can recollect in other years just piled together.
If you were have to give me an elevator speech of that, like, what did you learn?
From writing the book or going through the journey?
No, going through the experiences.
I learned that not only can't control life, but you really should let it go, because the beauty of love and self-love is all about it's the process of letting go.
Mm-hmm.
And when you hold something too tight, you constrict the possibilities, you reroute something that could have been better. I mean, you know that whole thing about...
Isn't it weird? Because you weren't like a Buddhist, but what you just described is Buddhist philosophy.
Yeah. Well, and I become more about letting go. I mean, you've probably seen that in the last, almost year. I've done a lot more letting go. And some of it's been sad.
You still seem pretty anal to me.
I'm always going to be anal. That's rigid. Part of my personality. A lot more letting go of, like, like, things will happen. It was interesting. Like, even when, you remember when my car broke down this summer and I was super sad. And I just was like, well, I guess the universe wants me to get a new car. Like, everybody's been bugging me for years. Like, why I keep driving around these, like, jalopies.
Chunky, icky cars. Yeah.
And so it was like, okay.
That you love.
Yeah. But I didn't force it. I mean, the old Corey would have taken that car to 25 shops, would have gone literally into a junkyard. And roamed around myself looking for this particular piece that my car needed. Right. I mean, but the new Corey was like, listen, the universe is telling me that it is time. And so I found myself doing smaller things like that, even if they're not around, like, love and relationships, but just generally, like, okay, the universe is telling me something, and just, like, don't control it. And guess what? I ended up getting this really cool car. I got a great deal on it. I really like it. So I don't know. So I learned a lot about letting go. Do I do a great job at it all the time? No, but I've done a whole lot better.
Right.
And if I hadn't gone through this experience and this journey where I literally micromanage things more than I ever did, like, I've always done that. I've always been very controlling and micromanaging in my life, but this particular year, it was like I was on steroids. And I came off that year and was like, I can't do that again. I thought my heart was going to explode of a heart attack because of all the stress I was causing myself. And I realized, like, that's not healthy. And that's not how I want to live. And so my active manifest that I've had for almost a year now, I have, besides my book manifest, I have only one other active manifest, and that's peace.
Mm-hmm.
And peace sometimes just means letting go. Peace means not roaming around the junkyard looking for something for your car.
Right.
Peace means just saying, okay, I got to let this go.
Yeah, you have, but that is a lot better. And that is what you asked for. And then you've gotten that in multiple situations.
I have, in almost every situation in the last probably year. I've gotten a lot of, I've let go of things that didn't create peace, and I brought in things that do create peace, I've been less, like, kind of focused on making it happen and more on letting it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's been a really big learning lesson, is taking what I learned by going through this experience and applying it and saying, okay, I'm going to do something different this time.
Right.
You know, but it made for a great book. I mean, my gosh, I was just, like, all over the place, but, you know, and a lot of people are, and I'm not saying if I were thrust into the situation that I would do it perfectly, because I wouldn't, but I would probably be more informed. And I'm thinking that people, if they read the book, they might say, oh, I've done that too. Or, oh, I can totally understand, or I can relate to that.
Or maybe they try it because they haven't done it and it helps them. Right?
It might, because some of the things that didn't help me might help other people. The whole point was that I was pleased about my process was that I was willing to try anything. And I appreciated that, because some people, when they're in a funk, they just get stuck. And you and I have talked about this, and I didn't get stuck at any point in this process. I was unsticking myself, and I was really happy about that. And so that, I am proud of myself for that part of the journey.
Good.
Yeah. So what do you want to, what other things do you want to know, Tracy? Well, you've been on this ride this whole time. You read segments of the book. You have a copy of the
I
book. You
know.
know, but and I know you have all the you have way more dirt on me than will ever be said in this book because you know.
Well, we are the most boring people. There's no dirt. I always said my therapist must be so glad that I'm coming today. just whining about stuff, but like, there's no dirt. That's the thing. Like,
no,
we're just like regular Janes, Joes. We're just like normal people. And that's the thing is like, I look around the world and it's like, all the awful things happening. Can't we just, why doesn't everyone just want to be normal? Like, why can't you just be mellow like person, you know? And when I say you're anal, you're rigid, sure, but you're also a pretty mellow person. I mean, there's really nothing happening. And that's the thing. It's like, it's just, I mean, there's really, we're like average, I mean, we're just not, neither one of us have, like, we do interesting things in public or, you know, with the work or the comedy or the this and that. But like, I mean, we drove to LA to go to Pride or what did we go to? Like, we
oh,
did
West Hollywood Pride. Yeah.
West Hollywood Pride. And we probably, you were talking to some lady about chives, chive plants.
No, it was, and, yeah, it was some kind of herb. Yeah, I know. It was boring.
I mean, and then
I'm boring.
Like, yeah, we're just not, I mean, that's the thing. Like, neither one of us is asking for too much in life, you know? And we're not doing anything that's like strange or weird or, you know, there is no dirt. There's no dirt.
No. I'm thinking more like when I wrote this book, I could only capture so much of my angst in the pages. But
well, you, okay, if you, I mean, if you want me to reveal your angst,
I mean, I was,
yes.
I mean,
sometimes
how many times
you cried
did I,
a lot.
I did. I cried. I cried.
Yeah,
I sobbed.
When you cry, you just cry and cry. You do cry.
And I sobbed. And I'm not normally a big crier, but oh my gosh, I was sobbing.
But isn't it good for you to have like the space to cry? Like, and I mean, I was there for a bunch of that crying and I just let it happen. I don't do that thing like, it's going to be okay. It's going to, well,
no.
We don't know. Actually, we have no idea what's going to happen. Just cry. Just feel your emotions and cry. And every time you felt better afterwards and you like, you really had like, it was really helpful. So I think like everybody says who's does this kind of work, like, yeah, feel your feelings. You can be trying to move forward and you can be trying to do other things in your life to not feel miserable. But when you are sad, you have to feel your feelings. I mean, if I didn't feel all my feelings all the time, then I probably wouldn't move past the things that I've been through. Right.
Right.
But I experience, I mean, that was one of my things. And I do feel like, you know, I don't know. It just, sometimes I thought in life seems so complicated. And now I just see it seems easier. Even though it's, I mean, this is an imperfectly awful world, right? But then I just think it's really not that hard. I don't know. It's interesting because my wife said last night to me that I'm less persnickety and cranky than I was used to be. Mm-hmm. And like part of that is, I mean, there's five of us in the house where there used to just be one. And it's like, making kind of systems. So there is a little bit of like control, right? Okay, well, let's, we don't, the chaos is causing harm to us, right? And so like organizing that chaos and getting things in the home to run more smoothly. Like, and for everybody who lives here to understand, like, these are, like, you need to be in this way when there's this amount of other people here so that you're not causing everybody else, you know, angst. And so we got more organized. We literally, I was like, just having more kitchen cabinets. We added more kitchen cabinets. Like, so things weren't just everywhere in our face, like put away. And like, it really has made a huge difference. And it's interesting because it's just, it, like nothing has changed in the, like our love or our passion or any of that. But the crankiness and the kind of like emotional distress of all five of us has totally like gone away. And part of that is because we took control of this is how we want our flow to be. Now, will things happen to us externally? Yes. But can we kind of have more control over our family? And so for me, maybe that deep depression about what was happening in the world helped me to actually focus on the home for a while. and be able to create that. So now I can look, okay, I need to look for work. I need to do this. I need to be back hiking again. I need to socialize. So it did help me, you know? So it is right. interesting because it's like, how are we organizing our very lives? So you're talking about a soulmate search. You're talking about relationship, but you're also talking about like, how are you organizing yourself? You know, right.
like how
we talk
how
a lot
you,
about that in self-love.
Well, yeah, exactly. And how are you showing up in the world? And that's why I was saying some of the things that I did do, like, and took control over actually helped because I can control some of those things.
Right.
Like I cleansed my house. I got rid of things that reminded me of my ex. So those are things like what you're talking about, kitchen cabinets. Like you're literally changing your physical space. I was creating boundaries around who I was going to spend time with. And those things actually do help, right?
Right.
You know, but it's almost like doing that is the one thing you can do because the whole outside world is just going to be the outside world and
right.
you can't control it. And so you have to be able to control your response to it, or, you know, at least have boundaries around it. And so
right.
I think that's kind of a universal lesson is this idea is what's within your purview, right? What can you do to create a sense of peace or reduce chaos? And for me, it was interesting because I had 44 things I tried to feel better. Right. And then you're talking about like cabinets and all the things you're doing to feel
right.
better because you were in this dark place. It's the same thing. What are we doing to feel better? And it was interesting because some of those 44 things helped me feel better, but it was also the process of doing 44 things, right? Like just saying, I'm going to set out to make this better. And like the, even if some of them didn't work as well, it was like just the trying of them made me feel hopeful
right.
because I was doing something.
Right.
And so that was the good part of it. But like I said, there's a real balance on some of the things I had to realize what I could make happen and what I had to let happen. And I kept mixing those up. I was trying to make stuff happen, like healing and love,
right.
which
right.
is really hard to do. And I was trying to let stuff happen, you know, like running into somebody at a bookstore that wasn't going to happen just naturally. And so part of it is just like, if I think for even for our listeners thinking of a universal message here is what is within your bounds, right? And
right.
what can you do and what can you try to feel better?
And why are you going to do these things? Are you going to do things because you're trying to create something? You know what I mean? You're trying to contrive something, or you're doing it because you enjoy it. So don't go right. and do it if it's not something you'd naturally do. Like,
yep,
that makes sense to me. Like, don't go and do that. Stand in a bookstore in one aisle and this and that, unless you really are going to like look through all the books and that's going to give you joy. Because if you're there for a false purpose, I think that the universe knows that and it responds that way, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I really do.
And that's the thing. It's like, I went and, you know, looked for love crystals until I could find one that I liked, and I brought them home, and I don't know if they work or not, but what about instead what I've done the last few years is, if, you know, sometimes I'll find a really cool rock that speaks to me like on a path, or I'll, you know, I'll be out and it feels more natural. It feels like that's supposed
right.
to be something I have, you know, to hold on to versus going to a store, sifting through a little box and finding a pink rose quartz and then bringing
right.
it home, hoping that my whole love life will change. And so it's kind of the, you know, it's kind of the difference between those. But there was also something really special in saying, okay, I'm going to get in the car. I'm going to drive over to the crystal shop. And it gave me something to do. So it wasn't all lost. It was just the process of trying to do these things was really kind of fun. It was kind of like a scavenger hunt for life. But some of these things just didn't work. And I had to be okay with the disappointment of that and then realize that other things that I didn't even anticipate were working magic. I mean,
well, and do you not know that if each one of those, maybe they didn't work in that moment or whatever, that the collective of them did work?
Yeah, right.
Because you were showing the universe your purpose, that you were intentional, you know? And I thought about that, like when I was manifesting like relationship, then I let everything else go. So I got the perfect relationship, but now I lost my job. Now this happened, you know? And it's like, I need to be, that I kind of like lose like focus because I focus on one thing and then I lose focus of the other things. And they do literally have fallen apart. They like fall away from me. And so I do think like being intentional at all times about everything is really what we need to be doing. Like if we want, you know, like all aspects. So I feel like you did all of these things to show the universe that you were serious.
Yeah. And the universe did deliver. I mean, it delivered, and it delivered the learning that I needed. It delivered the feelings that I wanted at the time. And I, you know, I would look back, people would say, if you had to do it all over again, would you do it differently? And I say, because of who I am, I would do it differently, because that's just how I'm showing up in the world today versus 5 years ago. But I don't know, there was something in the beauty of that process that helped me learn things about myself that I never would have known. And even you said it, and I write about it in the book, about how some of the most profound learning that I had during that year had nothing to do with the 44 items on my plan. They were things that didn't go the way that I was hoping. And I had, you know, I had a couple dates that went awry, one in particular that went really off the rails. And like, you know, I was like, uh-oh. So I wasn't expecting that and didn't know what to do. And so I had all these like unanticipated lessons.
Well, and thank God you had me there as your spirit guide in both the sense of the, like, not this world. And, you know, because, you know, we've talked about it on the podcast before, us jumping lives together and all that. But in this world, too, as a real life advisor, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, everybody needs these people, you know? Mm-hmm. I do think that we need people. And it's like, yeah, you did a lot of this on your own, and you also didn't do a lot of it on your own. And we did talk about that at the time. It's like, take, you know, that which serves you and that which doesn't, let it go. Like, don't try and force that. Don't try and force it with friends. Don't try and force it with people. And there was a lot of bad advice, right? And so you can just take that, hear it, and then let it go. I mean, that was the big thing for us. Like, a lot of the different podcasts. I mean, we did this podcast because of all this, right? And so all the things that we learned from these people who we had on, or these discussions that we had, it all does come down to, I do think, like, Buddhist philosophy of, you know, letting things kind of unfold and allowing that which is good to come inside of you and to put up boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, we met like our astrologer, Bethany, we met, you know, the psychic, all these people that were so helpful to me were met through this process.
Yeah. Yep. And then you and I met a lot of social connections that some stuck, some didn't stick, but that we learned something from all of those experiences. And in the end, you and I still came out with, you know, we had a whole group of people we came sort of in with, and we came out mostly just the two of us. And, you know, and I look at this book, and it's interesting because, you know, while I'm the protagonist in the book, I mean, you're the main character, and let's just be honest. And you know, people have talked, I'm serious, because people have talked about this book is not just a book of like healing from heartbreak. It's not just a book about trying to find love again and all in a, you know, romance or whatever it is. This is also, and I've been told this by people, this is a book about friendship. You know, there are some chapters that are dedicated specifically to what was going on in your life at the time. And while you might not relate to them now, at the time, they were significant parts of the process that I was going through. Right. Your life was important to me. And so my journey was shaped by not just how you showed up for me, but what was happening in your life at the time.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it is interesting because I am really removed from that now. And so like, I see your book and it doesn't relate. I don't relate to it. Isn't that weird?
Well, yeah, you're not the same person that you were in the book.
I know, it's so different. But yet, like, now I asked you to go hiking on Friday, I asked you to go hiking on Sunday. And it's like, within our own friendship, like, it's like, we are both, we've gone through a lot of things together. And then I think more recently in the past year, more separately. And I think it has to happen that way. Because I know that, like, when we've visited these psychics and they say, okay, you're a jumper and you guys keep coming back to learn the same lessons. And I told you, like, I don't want to come back here. Like, I feel like this world is so crazy, but, you know, we're constantly redirecting and figuring out, like, where can we be in the world and, like, in this universe and in the world. And I only got to this process and this way of thinking once we became friends. I told you I couldn't have been friends with you before we met because it wouldn't have worked out well, you know, for my personal life. Like, it would have been considered weird by my wife, that the person I was married to at the time. Like, why are you hanging out with this person all the time? Why are you getting into all this weird stuff? And everything happens when it's supposed to happen, right? Mm-hmm. And we've been told, oh, we've experienced all these lives together and we keep coming back here to learn the same thing. And we did. We learned everything. Like, once we met, when I was 50 years old, like, we started having all these experiences. But it also opened up to me this complete different view of us and who we are in the universe, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, meeting you at 50 will allow me to live out the rest of this life and beyond, I think, in a more, hopefully I remember these lessons, you know, after this life. But, like, I really do feel like my whole view of the universe has opened up. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting they say soulmate, right? Because people talk about what is a soulmate and, like, you know, all those terms that we threw around in the book and twin flame and soulmate and what's the other one? Divine partner. Right. Yeah.
Soul
and,
circle.
Oh, karmic partners. Mm-hmm. And, like, I don't feel connected to a lot of the things that happened in my past, but that's good because I don't feel anger about it. I don't feel upset. I don't want to invite those things back into my life, but it's like both, like, it's helped me. I think, so I got a message the other day from a lawyer who I know, this, the woman who got me involved in comedy first. And she was like, you know, your post, like the post you just posted on Facebook, like, it really speaks to me. And, like, this is the happiest time in my personal life. She's like 70, I think. And she travels a lot now and she's doing the things she wants to do, but she had a stroke like 10 years ago, like a really bad one. And so she's spending the rest of her life traveling, right? And she was reaching out to me and she's like, your post really spoke to me. Like, how are we living in this duality? She's like, you're the happiest you've been. You're newly married and you're being assaulted and it's just like so hard to live in this world, right? And I'm not even the one being shot in the streets, but like, how do we live in this world and still be happy? How do we experience these things and still look forward and be hopeful, you know?
Right.
And I think that's what you learned. That's what you learned. And I mean, that's what I learned. And that's what, you know, it's very interesting to me. Like, you meet people, like, honestly, like my wife, and it's like all of these bad things that happen and she feels it. Yes, she reacts like certain ways about certain things, but she never like stopped her optimism, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so it's so weird. She's, you know, younger than me, but I feel like we're at the same place in life. And like, I can also say to her, like, I've, in the past 5 years, my just mind has opened up, right? Mm-hmm. So we watch these movies now and listen to that Life After Life. And I'm listening to that book, The Light Between Us, about the psychic medium. And it really does give you a comfort, you know, to know, like, everything's kind of working the way it's supposed to, even if it's painful. I don't know. Do you feel like that's a lesson of your book? Do you feel like there's a lesson of your book?
Well, I mean,
it's like when I talk to you, it's like, I mean, I know the book, but it's like, yeah, like, is that a lesson?
Well, I think that the whole thing is really, we talk about the last 5 years and since I've met you, my whole world has opened up in very different ways. Like, I've always been sort of like a little bit woo woo, but not really like huge.
And you pushed your woo woo away.
I pushed it away. I pushed my intuition away, all that. But I met you and then we started getting into like law of attraction and manifesting. And we started just opening up portals of things that I had never seen and done. And so this book also chronicles the first year of that journey of when I'm, you know, opening to new ways of being and seeing in the world and mindset shifting and positive attitude. And so I really do believe that like, those are parts of who I am now. Like I don't actively manifest, as much because I just do it by virtue of mm-hmm. how I live. And I don't actively use law of attraction, but I'm very mindful of the energy I put out to the world because that's what I get back.
But I feel like you are doing it. You just don't know you're actively doing it. You're not like proclaiming it, but you are doing it. You're constantly doing it now. And I kind of lost a little bit of sight of that over the past couple months.
I know. And we've, and you and I have talked about it, not this direct way, but really this idea of, you know, you were getting really down and out about the world and like, how can you be happy about anything, Corey, when the world is falling apart? And I was like, well, the happiness and the joy is the only thing we have left sometimes.
Right.
And that's hard, but I, you know, I've been channeling that. And if you were to take who I am today versus who I was 10 years ago, I'm a really different person. I'm way calmer. I'm way just more
less reactive.
Less reactive. I don't let myself get agitated like I mm-hmm. used to. I don't have as much angst. I did during this year that I wrote the book, but once I went through that, I realized that didn't serve me at all. I mean, I was about to give myself a heart attack. So I've really learned to just sort of let some things go more than others and just say it, you know, it is what it is. And I really like that. But that journey started by meeting you. And that whole thing, like the breakup, meeting you, getting kind of a new social circle, a new perspective on things. So if I say, did those 44 things work? Yeah, they kind of worked because they created exposure to stuff I might not have otherwise done.
Right.
And here I am now. And so I'm so grateful. I'm really grateful. Even the painful parts of it. I'm so grateful I've gone through that process.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm grateful that you were there with me. I mean, I know in many cases we had just met and you had become my closest confidant in this whole thing.
Right.
And that was in some ways kind of terrifying and vulnerable because I had a lot of friends, but for whatever reason, I felt like leaning on you was what I was supposed to be doing, even though I hardly knew you.
But isn't that crazy? It's like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, like, our connection ended up being super positive and hopefully most people, I mean, you can't just be trusting of everybody who comes along. Right. But like that ended up being a super positive meant to be thing. But you don't, do you think though that like having that past life regressionist and having those people tell you, I mean, and also when we went to that tarot card reader, mm-hmm. and then she said she got this feeling we've been married in a past life. And then she literally told us like the time that it happened. And then like when we left, we were like, oh my God, like these are the things that we were like obsessed with growing up. And so like maybe all these things that happened for us, it couldn't have happened when we were younger because one, we both had partners. And so like we had to meet when we were single, not because we were ever going to date and not that there was ever any dating interest, as everybody knows. We had to meet at that time to open these things up. Cause I told you at one point, like after we started doing all this stuff, talking to psychics, talking to the astrologer, going to past life regressions and finding things out about like literally us and our lives, our previous lives. Like I would drive down the road and it was like click, 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 click in my brain. It was like, wow. And then that's what I'm saying. Like I manifested the perfect partner, the perfect relationship. And then suddenly, like, I forgot that there were jobs and that, like, I had the universe had to make me lose my job in October to slap me in the face and say, like, you can't forget. And maybe there's something better for me there or whatever. Like, it does take those harsh things happening.
Right. Yeah.
And big things. I mean, us meeting at that party was a big thing. You were miserable.
Right.
You know?
I was miserable. And I spent the next 2 months just struggling and then reconnected with you and then leaned on you more than I would have leaned on. I mean, anyone, you know me.
It's because of that discussion we had at the coffee shop when we realized we were like so much on the same page about everyone, everything. And then we were sitting there with somebody who was on a totally different page. You later became more friends with than I did, but I was like, whoa. Not my page, but we were so much on the same page about so many things. Yep. And like, we knew right then, like, hey, we're going the same place. Like it ended up being like the most helpful. And I've talked about this before. Like, I don't want to ask for your help with the work thing. I know I need your help, but I still am in a, like, we've always had this kind of parent child dynamic, you know, which somebody tells us from another past life experience. So it's like, I don't need your help. you know, I don't want your help,
Right.
but like you would be very helpful, right? And so we still, even though I can see these things, I still can't necessarily work them out
Right.
in the way that I want to right away, right? For whatever reason, maybe there's a reason, but I did get to the point when my brain just kept unlocking things or like, or the puzzle pieces were fitting together. Like I would feel like high driving down the street, like, oh my God, I'm just feeling the universe is here for me. And then it kind of like went away. And then like now I'm trying to get back to that, to refocus back to that. And so I do think like cyclical also, right? So life is cyclical.
Well, and a lot like what you're talking about too, is that sometimes this openness to the universe happens more so when we're in a space of like chaos and trauma and grief, right? Because we don't have much else to hold on to. And so you're looking around and looking for signs and hoping that something will happen. And whereas when you're in kind of a state of complacency, right? Like you're just like content and you're like chugging along, you're not really like, people aren't really looking to the universe for these big, huge messages
because
they don't need messages. But I think what you're talking about too is this idea as being really intentional that when we're even in those places of like kind of our status quo, right? Just kind of chugging along, that we also need to be really open and intentional and intuitive and, you know, looking, you know, to the universe and opening ourselves up to new ideas, because the process of that doesn't have to stop. It doesn't have to be as cyclical as it tends to default to. We can, you know, I mean, for me, I've lived in a state of that for most of the time since I unlocked it. So I haven't had like an ebb and flow with it. It's been a little stronger at some points, but those points have also been when I've been in like grief or, you know, like, you know, my mom's death or other, you know, kind of sad things, you know, relationships coming to an end or, you know, changes of things. And so, but other, even in the in-between though, I've still had some kind of universe possibilities, and you just have to be more intentional about making sure to keep an eye out for them and be open.
And putting yourself in those things. Like that's why I started listening to this book the other day, like yesterday or the day before. And that's why I watched that movie. And it's interesting because I did say when I was in that deep depression, like I need to find a purpose for living. And that movie just appeared in the TV show Life After Life, and my wife was like, how'd you find that? I'm like, it just was there. I literally said, like, out loud in the kitchen to nobody but myself, like, I need to find a purpose. Like I need to see something good. And so we watched that, and it was just so interesting because it was just right on topic. And I do think watching that helped me to say, okay, this isn't just, yes, all these awful, awful things are happening around us, and there's awful people doing awful things, but that's not the sum of the universe, you know?
Right, right. Well, I'm glad you're coming back into this space, because I think you'll find more peace in it. It's hard. It's really hard because, you know, we watch the news and all sorts of tragic things are happening, but you know, I mean, we find joy in what we can, and like, find joy in a sunset, or find joy in a great hike, find joy in a great conversation, a hug, an embrace, just a moment, right? And, and so, I mean, I went through this past summer, I went through a really hard time. It was relatively unanticipated. I didn't think it was going to be as hard as it was, just simply the cumulative nature of everything that was happening. It wasn't one thing. It was like 10 things were happening. And then I'm like, and my car broke down, right? But they all, every single one of those turned out, as soon as I started like letting go of the control around it, they turned out to be good and to be better than what I had and to be joyful. And and so it was like, okay, I can find joy even in grief. I can find joy even in loss. And, you know, there's that whole thing about manifesting, which is, you know, you're asking the universe for something, but you say, either this or something better. And we forget about that part, right? Like, you know, I want this job at this particular place. And you're like, but it's also, or something better. And so if you don't get that job, people are like, the universe didn't deliver. It's like, oh, wait a minute. There's something better out there for you. And so sometimes when we go through really hard times, we think the universe is somehow punishing us or isn't delivering what we wanted. I wanted to have this great car, and now my car isn't working, but I got an even better car. So I think part of that is also just kind of letting go and not saying like, you know, bad things happen and we should just be okay with them, but it gives us a different perspective. Like, okay, this happened, this setback happened, but maybe it was supposed to happen because without it, this other thing that's even better wouldn't have happened. And, you know, and it's hard. Like I can't look at like my mom's death and say, well, because of my mom's death, my life is better. It doesn't always work, but it does work in a lot of ways, right? With a lot of like the little things, you know, for you, I know one of the things, you know, you were talking about is just like, it's just, we're in a time period where everybody's getting sick and you've got more people in your house in a smaller place. And, you know, creating some rules around, you know, kind of being more sanitary has been really helpful, but that also spurred you into doing other things. And so maybe the getting sick isn't like the good part, but it spurred you into a whole slew of changes that are helping both your physical and your mental health. And it all came from a cough, right?
Right.
And so that's, if we look at the world like that, we can have more peace and more joy.
Wow. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm the interviewer now.
Oh, you're okay. Okay.
Yeah. I'm the interviewer.
It's such a rare role for you. So I'm trying to figure out what it means when you ask questions.
Yeah.
Hold on. You're going to ask me a question.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you a question to wrap this up.
Okay.
Like what are your takeaways then from this book? Like what do you want other people to take away? And what did you take away from this? And will you read your own book again? Or are you done? Like, will you, because I don't ever listen to our podcast. Like, would you, I can't stand the sound of my voice. And I rarely can read anything that I already wrote. Because I think, oh my God, did a 5-year-old write this? So can you... I have 3 parting questions. What do you want other people to get out of this? What did you get out of it? Your own book, if you read it, and will you read it again?
Okay. What do I want other people to get out of this? I just want people to feel like, you know, when you're going through a state of chaos or grief or loss, it could be anything. It doesn't have to be a breakup. It could be anything. It could be losing your job after 20 years and, you know, but whatever is that you don't feel so alone when you try to do everything you can to feel better. Because, you know, as humans, nobody wants to sit in a state of suffering. I mean, people want to feel better. And so kind of watching me go through grasping at straws at anything I could do to feel better, I hope people say, you know what? I've done that before and I don't feel so alone or I don't feel so weird doing it. And so give people a sense of like hope that you can learn something from that. And maybe people will go back and think, hey, I did this with, you know, like a divorce 3 years ago and now I can look back at it differently and maybe learn something from it. The other thing is I'm just hoping people find it kind of entertaining and funny. And I know when people are going through a tough time, just reading about somebody else's experience and making them laugh, you're like, okay, whew. I just needed a break. I had a friend of mine who was a beta reader, and she read this summer when she had experienced two deaths. And well, one in particular that was really hard for her. And she was reading it right when she found out about the death. And she said, this was the one thing that she could go to every night and read and get lost in the story of someone else. And that she laughed and cried along with me. And for just a moment felt a little bit of peace with the death. And I thought that was kind of nice, you know?
Yeah. It's already done something to help people.
It has. Yeah.
And it just got born today. Look at that.
It just got born today. So everybody else
is. It's pre-birth. It's already been helpful.
It's
amazing.
Yeah. I know.
That's like your thing. That's great.
But that's what I wanted. I wanted to help people. And then the second thing, my biggest takeaway from this was writing a book like this is really fun and exciting. It's also hard and a lot of work, but my big takeaway was that this was a really important time in my life, probably one of the most crucial times of any learning that I've ever had. And that while I can look back at it and kind of like, oh gosh, that was really hard at points, is that I can say, oh, that was actually really good at points. And, I don't know, just make more meaning. And the fact is like when I wrote this, right? Like, I've edited it like hundreds of times.
Right.
And so like 2, 3, 4, even 5 years out from this stuff, almost 5 years, I'm still like reliving and I'm still meaning making. And it's like, oh, I just picked that up. And so it's been a really good opportunity for some reflection. So I encourage people who are going through a tough time to, even if you're not a writer, is just consider journaling and then going back and reading those journals periodically, because you may find that you kind of learn new things about yourself.
Yeah, and read this book.
And absolutely read this book. And the last thing is, will I ever read it again? What was funny when it went to print. So it was kind of like, you know, I let the dog out of the carrier and I couldn't get it back in, kind of thing. And then I was told, you know, it's time to do your audiobook. So I was so scared that when I was reading the audiobook that I would find things that I didn't like the way that I wrote them. And then I'd already ordered 1,000 printed copies of this book. And then the other day I got the audiobook back and I had to listen to the whole thing, voice, the whole audiobook. And I had to, you know, make edits, right? Like make notations. And and so I binged it. I had to binge it over 2 days. It was actually really kind of fun because it, I didn't mind the sound of my voice, but it was, but I had to hear the story again. So I had to relive it again, the journey. But then I also had to like go, oh gosh, I hope there are parts that I wish I did differently. And there aren't actually. I would read parts of it again. And I listened to more edits of the audiobook the other day. And so it was just like, okay, all right, we're good. I don't know if I'll pick it up as a book and read it cover to cover. I've done that so many times, but I might.
Well, you might when you're 80.
When I'm 80, and I might listen to the audiobook when I'm out on a walk, but I kind of at a point where like, ooh, I don't want to find any errors.
right. Yeah. Well, it seems like you've gone over it enough times to have picked those up already, but you know, you never know. And you might see it out of place comma or like a space that shouldn't be there. And I would go insane. That's the thing. I don't ever want to see anything again because it would drive me bonkers for the rest of my existence.
Yes,
yeah.
It would. But bonkers. Would you ever listen to my audiobook?
I don't think I can.
No,
I can't listen to our podcast. I just can't. It's like, I'm telling you, when I'm done, when I've experienced it, I'm done. Like, I can't. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You're going to love it.
I'm not saying never.
I did your voice on the podcast. Oh, you're going to love it.
Oh, Lord have mercy. It was funny because we were in the car the other day. We were listening to Aesop. Like, there was some lady reading like an Aesop's fable. But it's a British lady. And I don't even know what fable it was, but it was about a fox. And it, like, got crow pie or something. And she would go, crow pie. But she was reading it. But then when she went to that voice, it was so, like, everybody, the twins were mesmerized in the car. It was kind of hilarious because it was just like her voice was so, it was clearly her changing her voice, but it was like so absurd. But it was so absurd that like you couldn't stop listening, you know?
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So I hope I don't sound like that.
No, I mean, you don't sound like that, but I gave you a cool voice in the book. You're definitely very
distinct. Oh, God.
And,
now that I know that,
it's really funny. I do have to tell you this one thing. So I have to, there's this one scene in the book where I go to this psychic and she's got like a thick Eastern European accent. And so at the beginning, when I started doing it, you know, I started doing it with this like, almost like a British accent. And then I ended with like a Texan drawl. But so the other day when I had to listen back to it, I was like, oh gosh, I do not want to listen to this chapter. I totally butchered this voice. I was actually okay. You can only tell if you're looking for it. But it was really funny because at the time when I recorded it, I thought, oh my goodness. Cause I'm not an actor. I don't know these voices.
Right. And what's funny is that psychic from California has an Eastern European accent. It's very weird.
Exactly.
And it's not a put on. It's not.
No.
It's not a fake. No, it's really weird.
No, she was the only one with like an accent I had to do. And then everybody else who was like a woman around the 40s or 50s that showed up that wasn't like a regular, they all had the same voice. I'm just so glad they weren't in the same scene.
Well, I hope mine is unique.
Yours was very unique. Yeah, you have a very unique voice. So
good.
Yours and...
All right. Well, that gives me more impetus to listen.
Oh, it's funny. Yeah. You're going to... Yeah, you'll get a kick out of it, but...
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, we better wrap it up because people are going to be like, this lady needs to shut up.
We could go on and on and on about life. But so what do we hope listeners got out of this? I have no idea, but go buy the book.
They need to read the book. And or listen to the audio book like we like to do while you're hiking or whatever, or walking.
Exactly.
And so, get out there and rock those relationships.
Woo! All right. That can be our good sign off. Here, do the real one, the real sign off, like I would do. Because you're the
introvert. I can do it. I don't know. Get the book. Here's my sign off. Go get the book, listen to the audiobook, and then go out there and rock those relationships.
If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship, and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.